Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 11. King Indra annihilates the demons. Text 5. Translation. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or by mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world or liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe. This is Indra speaking. Purport. There are undoubtedly different planetary systems for different persons, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha. Persons situated in the mode of goodness go up to the upper planets. Those in the mode of darkness and passion, however, are not allowed to enter the higher planets. The word divam refers to the higher planetary system known as Swargaloka. Indra, the king of the higher planetary system, has the power to push down any conditioned soul attempting to go from the lower to the higher planets without proper qualification. The modern attempt to go to the moon is also an attempt by inferior men to go to Swargaloka by artificial mechanical means. This attempt cannot be successful. From the present statement by Indra, it appears that anyone attempting to go to the higher planets by mechanical means, which are here called Maya, is condemned to go to the hellish planets in a lower portion of the universe. To go to the higher planetary system, one needs sufficient good qualities. A sinful person, situated in a mode of ignorance and addicted to drinking, meat-eating, and illicit sex, will never enter the higher planets by mechanical means. In other words, we never went to the moon. Text 6. Indra continues, today with my thunderbolt, which has hundreds of sharp edges, I, the same person, he's speaking to Bali Maharaj, just like when two people are about to fight, and back and forth the words go, hot words, because of hot minds, and then there's fighting. So this is what's happening. Daya Parthasarthi. Bali Maharaj, the Daitya Bali Maharaj and Indra are squaring off for a big fight. Before the big, this is the World Heavyweight Championship. In one corner it's Indra Tyson. On the other side it's Bali, whoever it is. Bali Maharaj versus Indra. So Indra is saying so many things, Bali says so many things, and then there's fighting. So now it's Indra's showing. With my thunderbolt, with its hundreds of sharp edges, I, the same powerful person, shall cut your head from your body. Although you can produce so much jugglery, because previously they fought when they were contending for the championship. There was a previous fight between Bali and Indra when they were going for the world championship. And then when in that fight, Bali Maharaj, he saw that he was losing to Indra, so then he did some hocus pocus. He did some mystic jugglery. He disappeared because he saw he was going to get bopped, get defeated by Indra. So then he disappeared. And Indra was looking, where is he? And then from an invisible position, Bali Maharaj started raining down all kinds of mountains and all kinds of illusions. So he didn't fight face to face like a good fighter. He ran and hid somewhere and hid and fought from a hidden place of mystic illusion. So now Indra is reminding Bali, oh, remember before you used all this jugglery through illusions, but you are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Now, try to exist on the battlefield surrounded by your friends and relatives. Now Bali Maharaj replies, all those present on the battlefield are certainly under the influence of eternal time. And according to their prescribed activities, they are destined to receive fame, victory, defeat, death. Fame, victory, defeat, and death, one after another, purport. If one is victorious on the battlefield, he becomes famous. But if he is defeated, he may die. Both victory and defeat are possible. Whether on such a battlefield as this, in Swarga, or on the battlefield of the struggle for existence, everything takes place according to the laws of nature. Prakriti kriyamanani gune karmani sarvashaham. Since everyone, without exception, is subject to the modes of material nature, whether one is victorious or is defeated is not independent, but is under the control of material nature. Bali Maharaj was very sensible. He knew that the fighting, Bali Maharaj knew that the fighting between the demigods and the demons was arranged by eternal time, and that under time's influence, one must accept the results of one's own activities. Therefore, even though Indra threatened that he would now kill Bali Maharaj by releasing the thunderbolt, Bali Maharaj was not at all afraid. This is the spirit of a Kshatriya. Yude chap yapalayanam. A Kshatriya must be tolerant in all circumstances, especially on the battlefield. Thus Bali Maharaj asserted that he was not at all afraid of death, although he was threatened by such a great personality as the King of Heaven, Lord Indra. Om Ganatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Mukam Karoti Vachalam Angum Langayate Grim Ekripata Maham Vande Shri Gurundinatarnam Paramananda Madhavam Tavevasmi Tavevasmi Najivami Toyavina Iti Vigyaya Devi Tvam Nayamam Charanam Tikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So Bali Maharaj is presenting one of the great philosophical quandaries for all ages. He's presenting one of the great philosophical issues: free will versus destiny. Free will versus destiny. Is everything destined? Is everything predestined by karma, and the living entity has no independence and no free will? Or is there free will? What is the answer? So Bali Maharaj is explaining here in this verse. He's saying, yes, Indra, you can taunt me like you're taunting me. And you can tell me you're going to cut my head off. And Indra, you can taunt me with your angry words that you're going to cut my head off with your many-edged thunderbolt. But I understand, prakriti kriyamanani gune karmani sarvashaha, that everything is going on by the arrangement of material nature. I understand that this whole battle is arranged by destiny. It is destined to happen. So here in this verse, we're presented these two concepts, free will versus destiny. Sometimes people, they call the word destiny fate. And people in the Western countries, they say, oh, Indian people, they are lazy. People, and this is what the British used to say in the 1900s and 1800s. Indian people are very lazy. They believe in this fictitious law. They believe in this fictitious law that they call karma. Some fictitious imaginary law called karma. And because they believe in this karma, they say, everything is fate. So why should we work hard? Because we are destined to receive a certain amount of happiness, sukha, and a certain amount of dukkha, distress. So it's already coming to us, so why work hard? So because this India is governed by this law of karma, they are not making material progress. They're not keeping pace with England and America. Well, it wasn't in the America. I'm saying they're not keeping pace with England and France and Germany, these more established European countries in the 1700s, 1800s. So the British were propagating this propaganda. But actually the fact is that there is a law known as karma. So our free choice, so these two things are reality. There is free choice, there is free will, and there is destiny. And this is how it's explained. Our free choice determines our destiny. So destiny is simply the expression of your free choice. Destiny is the expression of your free will, expression of your independence from your previous life. You lived before. You had another life. You were a man or a woman or whatever. And you engage in certain punya karma and certain papa karma. You made the choices. And by making those choices, then you got a certain result in this life. And you'll be blessed with certain janmaishvarya shuta shibir. There are five things that you're given by your destiny. A certain kind of birth. A rich man, a poor man. Janma. Aishvarya. Certain wealth. You'll be, as I mentioned, you may be very wealthy or very poor. Shuta shibir. You may be very intelligent, very learned, fantastic memory, photographic memory, Einstein, or some big brain. So you have certain shuti, due to your previous destiny. Some people are foolish. You can go to school 10, 20 years, they still can't add 5 and 5 is 10. But there's no sumedha. There's no brain. So it is their karma, because of their sinful previous lives, they were not blessed with shuti. Janmaishvarya shuta shibhir. Shri means beauty. Some people are very beautiful. They look like demigoddesses or demigods. Very strong, powerful, handsome, beautiful. So this is Shri, the beauty. And then Bir is strength. Some people are very weak. Some people are very strong. And these same things are written in your hand and written on your face and written in your Janma Kundali. Destiny. So this is a result of your previous activities. But when you come into this life, because of your destiny, because of your previous karmas, good and bad karmas, you're given a particular environment. You're given a particular environment. Now, in the context of that environment, in the surroundings of that environment, you have free will. You have free choice. For example, a man in his previous life, he's very pious. He does so much sukriti and so many pious things, giving grains in charity, digging wells, making public lighting in public roads, making bathing ghats, giving clothing to the poor, so many punya things in previous life. And in this life, he takes birth as Mr. Birla or Mr. Tata. He takes birth very wealthy. A person receives great wealth, beer means wealth. He gets great this Aishwarya, this opulence. He's born in a very wealthy family. Why? Why? Because of his good karma, his punya karma. So he's born very wealthy. Now his environment, he's surrounded by an environment of opulence, extreme opulence. But now here's his free will. This is how free will works. Here's his free choice. I have this money. It is my free will, and I have the free choice and free will to spend this money as I like. If I choose to spend this money for further punya, building schools, Mahamantra Vidyalaya, Mahamantra Das Vidyalaya, Mahamantra Das Hospital, Mahamantra Das, and all these things he does with his crores of rupees, then in next life, by that free choice, I shape my destiny. By your free choice, you determine your destiny. But I can take my money. I have the free will to take that money or go to Pattaya Beach in Thailand and just buy jewelry and this thing and that and just waste all my money for sin, engage in papa. So I have the free choice within the context of my environment to act sinfully or piously. And then by that free choice, I shape my next life. I'm very wealthy in this life due to last life, but if I make the choices to engage in sin, run with prostitutes and eat this thing and that thing and gamble and go to Las Vegas, do all sinful activities in this life by my free choice, then in the next life, I'm born as a cockroach in Las Vegas. I'm born as a rat in Pattaya Beach, or as a monkey in Thailand, because of my monkey-like activities. If we have human form of life, and we live like an animal, if we have the choice, we're human beings, you're a human being, in human life we have free choice. Human life we have free choice, and our free choice is being in the context of our destiny. For another example, so you can understand the concept of how we are controlled by destiny, but we have some independence and some free will. You buy a ticket to Bombay on the plane. That plane is going to Bombay, basically. Forget about terrorists and the kidnapping and all that. But basically, for the analogy's sake, you buy the ticket to Bombay, the plane is scheduled to go to Bombay. So that compares to your destiny. By certain activities in previous life, you get a ticket. You get a certain ticket. This kind of ear, this kind of nose, karmana devane chena jantur dehopapatiye. Karmana devane chena jantur dehopapatiye. By the arrangement of your karma, or your good in activities, and the supervision of the devatas and the paramatma, you're given a particular body and a particular environment. This country, this family, this body, this nose, this eye, this hair, this is karma. So you buy the ticket, Bombay on the airplane, that is your destiny, that is your karma. Now, you're destined, that plane is going to Bombay, you're going to Bombay. So in your last life, you got a destiny, 60 years. 60 years destiny. So you only live to be 60, not 61, not 58, not a year less or a year more. 61, that's your ticket. So that's your destiny. Now you're on the plane. You're sitting on the plane's going to Bombay, that's your karma, that's your destiny. Now, where is the free will? Where is the independence? Where is the free choice? It is there. The stewardess comes by and says, Ekalavya, would you like veg or non-veg? I have my own prasadam, thank you. I have guru prasad for my gurudev. I don't want your boga. Excuse me. So he pulls out his 25-tier tiffin, 3-tier sabji, 4-tiers pakoras, 5-tier sweet, about 8 feet high tiffin. So this is free choice. Do you want to watch the movie or do you want to sleep? Do you want to move? And then you have the free choice to take a gun and say, okay, take this plane to New York City. So you have the free choice to pull out a gun and try to kidnap the plane. And then when you get, then they go somewhere and they will arrest you and put you in jail. Now you have the free choice to change your seat and meet another businessman. He's in the same business as you are. And you have some friendship and you discuss with him and you get off the plane and you make an alliance. You make a partnership. And then you do business together. Well, so many free choices you have. But the plane goes to Bombay. You get in Delhi, it goes to Bombay. So this is the analogy Acharya has used to explain how we have free will. Some free will, we have some choices. So now we're in the human form of life. And so much destiny is on our heads. So much karma, as explained here. The eternal time factor. The Paramatma, or Antaryami, which is residing in the heart of everyone, is also sometimes called Kala. The Paramatma is also sometimes called Kala, or the eternal time factor. Because the Kala factor, or the Paramatma, is noting down. Krishna is there as the secretary. He's there with his computer. He's typing in all the good things you do. All your good karmas, punya karma and papa karma, he's typing in. So the time factor, everything is going on under the time factor. We're being pushed forward by the time factor. We're in the time factor. So this Kala, a factor of time, represents the Paramatma. Now, we have these choices. So now we come in human life, we have a choice. I will stay home and watch the Pakistan-Indian soccer match. No, I make the choice. I will go to the ISKCON temple and hear Bhagavad Pat. That's free choice. We are here by a free choice. It's not destiny. Just like sometimes people say, they ask Prabhupada, well, what if someone commits suicide? Is that destined or is that free choice? And Prabhupada, suicide is free will. Free will. You have the choice. Any one of you can say, I want to kill myself. Of course, if you kill yourself, then you create so much bad karma. By your choice, your free choice. Now how do we stop this karma? How do we get free from this karma? There's different ways. But basically, we get free from karma, which is within the which is the permutations. We make choices, good choices, we get good results. We make bad choices, we get bad results. But we stay in the field of karma. This material world is the karma sthan. And if we're situated, this Prabhupada quotes a verse in the purport, Urdhva gacchanti sattva sto. Urdhva gacchanti sattva sto, or sta. So sta means situated or standing. If we're standing in sattvagun, urdhva, we go up. If we live our life in this material world, in the earth planet, in sattvagun, when we die, because we chose sattvagun, we chose sattvic bhog, we chose sattvic activities, we chose sattvic life, then by that choice of choosing sattvic life, our destiny, our karma, our destiny will urdhva gacchanti sattva sto. Because we're situated in the mode of goodness, we will go up in next life. We will go to swarga. So this is called sta. This is karma sta. This is the place where we're situated. Just like the word karma comes from the word kri. The word kri, K-R-I, means to create. Kri means to create or to produce. So by our actions, we create or produce a certain reaction. So now, how to stop this cycle, this karma chakra? This samsara chakra is also called the karma chakra. It's also called the kala chakra. They're synonymous. Our life is going on under the influence of kala, the time factor. And our life is simply going in a circle. Birth and death and old age and disease. So it's samsara. And what is keeping that circle moving? What is keeping the wheel of samsara moving? Karma. So you have kala chakra, karma chakra, samsara chakra. We have a three-wheeled vehicle. Like we have these scooters. Scooters have three wheels. All the devotees have three wheels. Two in the back and one in the front. So you have samsara chakra, the wheel of samsara, the wheel of karma, the wheel of time. And you're on the scooter of life. You're situated as a driver on that scooter, being propelled by samsara, kala, and karma. So how to stop? Rama Samhita, Lord Rama says, karmani cha niradhati cha bhakti pajam. Karmani niradhati. Karmani niradhati. Karmani niradhati cha bhakti chakintu cha bhakti pajam. Brahma, Lord Brahma, he says, in the Brahma Samhita, karmani nirahati cha kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Karma can be destroyed. Karma can be stopped. Our destiny can be stopped by one thing. Bhakti bhajam. Bhakti bhajam. By doing bhakti, by serving Krishna, we can stop the cycle of karma. There's no more karma. Now it is explained, there's two types of karma. This is explained in Chandogya Upanishad. There's sanchita karma and kriyamana karma. Sanchita karma and kriyamana karma. Kriyamana karma means that karma which you're generating right now. The activities you're doing now, you're doing good things, you'll get good result. You're doing bad things, you'll get bad result. Kriyamana karma. Then there's sanchita karma. Sanchita karma has two divisions, parabdha and anarabdha. Parabdha means that karma, those actions which you did in previous life and this life, which you're experiencing the fruits of, you're eating the fruits. You're eating the bitter fruits. Right now, you're eating the bitter fruits of your sins from this life and previous life. And you're eating the sweet fruits. You're eating the sweet fruits of your punya, of your good activities from previous life. Money, good looks, good talking, you're a good talker. Like our Maha Mantra, he's an expert talker. This is punya. He was a great yogi in his last life, so he has all these powers, mystic powers. So we're eating the bitter fruits of our bad karma and relishing the sweet fruits of our good karma. So this is parabdha. It's right now. Then anarabdha means those karmas, those actions which we did, good or bad, which are not yet fructified. We're not eating that fall yet. That fall is on the tree. We're not eating it. So that's called sanchita. Sanchita karma has two divisions. Now, as Brahma said, when one performs bhakti bhajan, he destroys karma. Karmani nirdahati, nirdahati cha bhakti bhajam, kintu cha bhakti bhajam. So what is bhakti bhajan? What does it mean to do bhakti bhajan? How can I get free from my karma? The most important aspect of bhakti bhajan is shravanam. Shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam padasevanam. So what is that shravanam? That shravanam means to hear spiritual philosophy, to attain Brahma Vidya. To attain Brahma Vidya. Knowledge, Brahma Vidya means knowledge of God, knowledge of Brahman, not Atma Tattva Gyan. Knowledge of the Atma. What is the truth of the soul? What is the truth of God? What is the truth of this world? What is karma? This is a subject matter of Bhagavad Gita. The Jiva, Jiva Tattva, Srishti Tattva, the creation, karma, Ishvara Tattva, the Supreme Lord, God. And this Bhakti Tattva, Yoga Tattva. What is this Bhakti? Shakti Tattva. So this is, human life is meant for this. So Krishna is explaining very nicely, very important verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 37. Yathai dhamsi samidhognir basma satkuruteer jana janagni sarvakaramani basma satkurute tatha. Sarvakaramani. Krishna is saying, sarvakaramani, all karmas. Now here's the translation. As a blazing fire, as a blazing fire burns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. This means that Brahma Vidya destroys karma. Now in Chandogya Upanishad and Vedanta Sutra, it explains, how does Brahma Vidya destroy karma? What is Brahma? Brahma Vidya means studying Bhagavad Gita and teachings of Lord Chaitanya and nectar of instruction and reading all these books. This is Brahma Vidya. Prabhupada gave us a warehouse of Brahma Vidya, a storehouse. He gave us fire or transcendental knowledge. But unfortunately, no one likes fire. We don't want to read the books. We don't expose ourselves to that purifying fire. We would rather stay in the fire of material existence. We would rather stay in the Dhavanala. Dhavanala. But Guru comes. Guru comes to get us out of the fire of material existence. That's why Vishwa tells us, who is Guru? Samsara Dhavan Alalita Loka. This loka, this planet is burning. Dhavanala. Dhavanala means fire. The fire Kam Agni, Krodh Agni, Loba Agni. The fire of lust, the fire of greed, the fire of envy, Matsarya Agni. So this is what samsara is made of. Samsara Dhavanala Lila Loka. But Guru comes like a big meg, like a big monsoon cloud. Because when there's a fire in the forest, big forest fire, you can't put out that fire with a little fire truck. You come with a little truck with a little can of water on the back. A fire truck has a big reservoir of water and a hose, a little motor. You can't put out a forest fire like that. So by your own endeavor, by your own activities, you cannot put out the fire of material existence. It is impossible to put out the fire of material existence. We can't put out the fire of material existence by our own endeavor. So, just like you can't put out the forest fire, but when Krishna, by His divine arrangement, produces a beautiful Meg, Sham Meg, Ghanasham, Krishna's name is Ghanasham, His beautiful Varna, His color is like the monsoon cloud. When a huge cloud comes over the forest fire and rains down for a day or two, it completely puts out the fire. We come from California, and we have these big forests there, redwood forests, and sometimes there's a forest fire that's raging. And they say on the radio, 25,000 acres are on fire. You know what an acre is? I think it's 2 hectares is 1 acre. So there's a fire in the forest, 25,000 acres of fire. And they're trying to put it out with their little helicopters and little... Impossible. It's destiny. So much trees had to be burned. But if a big, like Govardhan type storm, big rainstorm comes and can put out. So Guru comes to put out the forest fire. Samsara Dhavan Nalalita Loka Chanaya Karunya Gunaganatvam Pratasya Kalyana Gunarnavasya Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. So how does Guru put out the fire of material existence? He puts out the fire of material existence by this, by giving Divya Gyan. This is Diksha. Diksha means Divya Gyan. Diksha means, D means Divya Gyan, and Sha means to eliminate, to cleanse, to purify. So Guru gives spiritual knowledge to the disciple, and he encourages him, and he induces him, and he inspires him to study the Vedas. He fills the disciple with Brahma Vidya, and he creates a desire in the disciple to study Brahma Vidya. That is called Diksha. When one receives Diksha, he becomes the Guru. The spiritual master transfers from his mind and heart. The guru has an intense appetite. He has an intense appetite for Brahma Vidya. He's absorbed in Brahma Vidya. Tasmad gurum napadyate. Brahmanishtam. He's fixed in Brahman. And so when he gives Diksha to his disciple, he transfers from his mind and heart that intense desire. He transfers that appetite, he transfers that intense thirst to devour Brahma Vidya. Just like Maya Dhanava. Maya Dhanava was one asura, and Maya Dhanava likes to eat forests. So Indra once was doing some work, and he was blessed by Maya Dhanava with some weapons. So Indra gave him a forest or something, I can't remember. So Maya Dhanava ate the whole forest, he's a fire like Maya Dhanava. So this desire to devour, to study transcendental knowledge, the guru invests that in his disciple. He creates that. So then, when the disciple starts poring over the books and studying the Bhagavatam and studying the Chaitanya Charitamrita and reading Prabhupada's books, then the magic begins to work. The magic begins to work. The fire begins to burn. And that fire of Brahmavidya is incredible. It's explained in Chandogya Upanishad that the fire of Brahmavidya burns up all kriyamana karma. All kriyamana karma, all karma generated in this life is burned up by Brahmavidya. Not only that, Brahmavidya burns up the sanchita karma. Sanchita karma means the anarabdha karma, which is not yet fructified. Brahmavidya, the fire of spiritual knowledge, burns that up too. Now there's one remainder, prarabdha karma. Brahmavidya also burns up the prarabdha karma. So when you have no more prarabdha karma, and no more kriyamana karma, and no more anarabdha karma, what's left? Because this body is a karma sthan for the atma. This material world is a karma sthan for the jivas, the jiva bhadha, nitya bhadha, for the bound jivas. So if you have no more karma, it means you have no more body. Mukti, liberation. Because we only stay in this body for karma. So then the question is raised. If one attains Brahmavidya, if upon attaining, this is a question raised in the Chandogya Upanishad. If when one attains Brahmavidya, then his material body is finished, then what about the conditioned souls? Because the sages and yogis, they will do tapasya, and they will study Vedanta, and they will just study the Vedas like anything. The Advaitin sannyasis and the Vaishnav sannyasis, they will absorb themselves in Brahmavidya, they will become purified from all karmas, and then they'll get liberated. Yeah, but what about us? What about Mr. Agarwal? What about Mr. Gupta in Delhi? Who's going to preach to him? Who's going to give him Brahmavidya? Who's going to inspire him to read the Bhagavad Gita? Who's going to teach him the Bhagavatam? Because he doesn't have the karmas to be a yogi. He has a free choice, but he doesn't have the determination to make that free choice. So it's explained there in Chandogya Upanishad that Krishna, he keeps the great sages, he keeps the yogis and gurus in this material world, in their material body, for the purpose of disseminating and preaching Brahmavidya. So in other words, they're due to be liberated. So these Mahabhagavats, these Mahapurushas, they're liberated souls, Jivan Mukta. But they stay in their body, and then they stay in their body because of, and Krishna allows a little bit of their prarabdha karma to keep working. Because his body only exists because of karma. So the pure devotees, the Mahabhagavats, they continue to exist because Krishna wants them to give spiritual knowledge to the conditioned souls. That's his compassion. That's Krishna's mercy. The guru is the Kripa Murti Shakti. Kripa Shakti Murti. He is the form of Krishna's mercy, mercy energy. So the guru stays in his material body, and that material body is propelled or is kept going because of his prarabdha karma. It's still maintaining. But Krishna reduces that prarabdha karma. That's why we say when for the liberated soul and also for the devotee, your karma, your papa karma from the last life is to cut your finger off because you cut someone's finger off in last life or whatever. So you're in Krishna's kitchen and you're cooking for Krishna and you, or the guru, maybe the guru is cooking an offering for his Thakur and a knife slips and just little scrape because Krishna reduces the karma for his devotee. Karamani Niradati. So this is the purport that's given to this verse when it says Swakarmani. Krishna is saying Swakarmani. All your karmas are destroyed by the blazing fire of transcendental knowledge. So we have this choice. Now back to destiny and choice. Destiny is somehow you had the punya, the sukriti, to meet a Mahabhagavat, to take diksha, and now you're devotees. That's your good fortune. Now here's your choice. Will I act in such a way? Will I make the choice? Will I use and utilize my minute independence to act in such a way that I get out in this lifetime? Or will I just take it easygoing life in Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness and an easygoing life do not go together. Krishna consciousness means either you're advancing You're going forward and surrendering more and getting more detached from Maya and more attached to Krishna, or you're going back. There's only two directions. You can't stay just balancing. You're either going forward or you're going back to Maya because of your offenses, aparads, or negligence, or laziness. So we have the free choice to choose now as devotees. I will study Prabhupada's books or I won't study. I'll open the books and read or not. That shapes our destiny. Man is the architect of his destiny. How do you design your destiny? By your free choice. So you can see there's an interplay between free choice, free will, and destiny. So our inducement, our plea is that there's a fire of transcendental knowledge waiting at our fingertips. And that fire will purify us of so much karmas. But we're not studying. We're not reading. I've interviewed some devotees here. They're 5 years in this movement. 6 years in this movement. They haven't read Bhagavad Gita. You're sitting right next to them. You may be one of them. They haven't read Bhagavad Gita. They haven't read one page of Nectar Devotion. They haven't read Krishna book. They're 6 years initiated devotees in ISKCON. You might say, I don't believe it. It's a fact. Believe me. So it's a very sad thing to hear. It's a very sad thing and a heartbreaking thing to hear for me. So, the appeal, sometimes you make a presentation, discuss philosophy, then you make an appeal. And the usual appeal here is, go out and make money. That's the usual appeal here because we need so much money. But my appeal, this class has an appeal. It's called the closing. You can close a lecture in different ways. So this is a public appeal. I'm not asking for money. I'm not trying to sell a product. Well, I am in one sense. My appeal is, please read the books. Please. It's for your benefit. Do you want to get free from lust? Do you want to get free from greed? Do you want to get free from envy? Do you want to get attached to Krishna? Do you want to love Krishna? Do you want to get purified? Everybody will say, yes, 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 yes. Well, will you please read Prabhupada's books or any spiritual books of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy? And then I ask that, no. Maharaj, yes, but. Yes, I want to read. But my family, but my job, but my wife, but my husband, but my kid, but. And your whole life goes by. 5 years. The people are telling me they haven't read any books for 5 years. If I come back in 15 years, well, you've been here 20 years. Have you read anything? Oh, Maharaj, you know, I have 29 kids and my husband, and it's I don't have any time. I said, well, you know what? You're going to die tomorrow. You know, you're 59 years old and you're supposed to die at 59 in 2 days. Now you have one more day. Do you think maybe tonight you can read a little bit of Krishna book before you die? I'll try, Maharaj. I'll give it a good try. There's a fire. Brahma Vidya. See how powerful Brahma Vidya is. Krishna is telling us in Bhagavad Gita. The fire of transcendental knowledge. Guru gives two things. Mantra and transcendental knowledge. And by these two things, by mantra, transcendental knowledge, by sadhusanga and sadhana, perfection is attained. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Question is, there are many limbs or navavida bhakti, many limbs of bhakti, including the primary and most important limb, which is chanting Hare Krishna. If you read Krishna's Kaviraj's Chaitanya Charitamrita, or you hear from any acharyas, if you ask any acharya, they say, well, there's 64 limbs of bhakti, and there's 5 most important limbs, Maturavas, Bhagavad Shravan, Sarusanga, Nam Kirtan, and then of all the different types of bhakti, and if I just have to do one thing, if I want to do that one thing, what is the most valuable, most important, the essential thing to do? And what will all the books say? And what will all the acharyas say? Nam Sankirtan Kohe Naratamadas. Nam Sankirtan. This is it. Even those 5 most important things that Rupa Goswami gives, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he explains that each of those 5 means Nam Sankirtan, which we've spoken before. So the Maharaj is reminding us of that point, Nam Sankirtan, chanting Krishna's name in kirtan and japa. This is the most important. And of course, to do that, you need a little energy. need a little energy, so we take prasadam. So ultimately, these two things are the most important, which Maharaj mentioned. And now, so what is the relationship between chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasadam and Brahma Vidya? That is Brahma Vidya. That is the realization of Brahma Vidya, which you were intimating when you said, well, if we read the books, because there are dasamul, there are 10 tattvas that we need to understand in order to progress in Krishna consciousness. One of them, of course, jiva tattva, srishti tattva, shakti tattva, prema tattva. So one of them is nam tattva. What is the name? Who is the name? Why the name? Where the name? When the name? How the name? What is nam sambandha? What is nam abhideya? What is nam prayojana? What is all the truth of the name? And that guru has to give. Because when he gives all the knowledge about the name and all the understanding, then the disciple says, oh, this is pretty important. This holy name is very important. It does so many things and so many things can be done. Now I'm inspired. My intelligence is inspired. Philosophy is food for the intelligence. And intelligence functions to discriminate. Do this, don't do that. This is good for you, do it. And then it pushes on the mind. Mind, listen. Do it, it's good for you. Shreyas and prayas. So no philosophy, intelligence is weak. Then intelligence is weak, then the mind and senses take over. So then we chant one, two rounds. Oh, that's enough. I did some Harinam, that's good enough. No, but when the intelligence, so much non-tattva is there in the intelligence, and that intelligence tells the mind and senses, no, be determined. Finish your 16 rounds, chant the holy name. So we must have these tattvas are there. So of course the holy name is the most purifying thing. But we have no faith in the holy name. We have no determination to chant the holy name. We have no understanding of the holy name. Therefore there's a whole branch. There's a whole mula, tattva mula, a whole root of knowledge called nam tattva. There's a whole book, a 600-page book called Sri Nam Amrita. Sri Nam Amrita, 600 pages of quotations by our founder Acharya about the holy name. Remember, Maharaj, that book, Sri Nam Amrita? So, if you read Prabhupada's books, what will you get? If you read Prabhupada's books, you'll get Brahma Vidya. But part of that Brahma Vidya is that Brahma Vidya comes in divisions. Brahma Vidya comes in categories. Vidya means, just like you say, it's a Vidyalaya. Vidyalaya means school, but in that school, they teach philosophy and psychology and medicine and secretary work and computers and so. So when we get Brahma Vidya means, Brahma Vidya is divided into 10 categories. So when you study the books, one of the categories of knowledge that you get is called Nam Tattva. You learn about the name. And so that's why Prabhupada has 600 pages of quotes about the name, because in Prabhupada's books, you learn all about Nam Tattva. So when you read Prabhupada's books, you get Nam Tattva, which gives you encouragement and gives you intellectual understanding and philosophical awareness. So with philosophical awareness and intellectual understanding, you get the strength and determination to push your mind and push your senses into finishing your mala and chanting more. Because you understand. You understand, why am I chanting? What is the purpose of chanting? What is this holy name? How do I chant? What is the correct way? All this is tattva. So that's part of Brahma Vidya. So by learning about the holy name, which is the ultimate essence, this is the Vedanta, is to chant Shuddha Nam. Because Shuddha Nam gives everything. So this is the ultimate Siddhanta. This is the Vedanta. The end of Vedas is Prema Nam. This is the conclusion. So by studying all these books, we learn all about the holy name, then we get encouragement and strength and determination to chant correctly and properly. It's like we have one book. Here's our advertisement. We have one book, Appreciating Navadvip. And there's 30 pages about the holy name. All about the holy name, taken from all different, from Prabhupada's books and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta. 30 pages describing how to chant the holy name, what is the conception of the holy name, how to meditate upon the holy name. So if you don't want to read all those thousands of books of Prabhupada, at least read these 30 pages. Made it simple. The 30 pages you can read. So Brahma Vidya, so the holy name is also a fire. It's the greatest fire. It burns up all of our karmas. Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni. The same word is there, Davagni. Davagni. Cheto Marjanam. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, this Harinam, this Sankirtan, it is a white lotus of good fortune, Chandrika. And This burns up. Chaito Dharma, it cleanses the mirror of the consciousness by chanting the holy name. But we are intellectual beings. We need to have inducement and encouragement. So knowledge, Brahma Vidya gives the strength. Brahma Vidya gives the inspiration to perform the practices of bhakti. But as Brahma says, by bhakti bhajan alone, all karma is eliminated. So if you can sit peacefully with nam, with your japa, you don't have to read any books. You don't have to read any books. You sit down and chant 24 hours a day, you'll get this karmani nirdahati. All your karma will be destroyed. But we can't do it. Because we're restless. Because we're offensive. Because we're envious. Because we're ignorant. Because we're lazy. So we need all this knowledge behind us to purify us. To purify us so that we can chant Hare Krishna nicely. That's why Gayatri is given. Part of giving Brahman Diksha, Harinam will take you to the spiritual world, and Harinam is done in the spiritual world, and Krishna's holy name will give prema. There's no need for Diksha. But Diksha is very complementary. It helps one become purified so he can properly chant the holy name. Because Diksha enables him to study Brahma Vidya and be exposed to the full potency of it. Diksha enables him to do puja and touch the Thakurji, and become, his senses and mind become purified. So with that additional purification, by Diksha we can chant the holy name purely without aparads. And then when we chant with Namabhas, very quickly you get liberated, then you go further and further and further. Well, we should understand clearly that the ultimate perfection is Shuddha Nam. And the ultimate sadhana is Nam Sankirtan. But to get to that point of having confidence in the holy name, and having faith in the holy name, we need Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya creates faith. We are followers of Lord Chaitanya, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya, he not only encouraged his followers to study and go through all the shastras, but he empowered, directly empowered and ordered the Sadgoswamis, Rupa and Sanatan specifically, to compile and write shastras. And Prabhupada said, these books are for us. Rupa Raghunatha Pode, Hoive Akati. He said, when will we be eager, Akati, Akati, when will we be eager to read the books of the Goswamis? So we're not eager. We have no eagerness. We've been 6 years with Tilak and Kantimala, and we haven't read one page. We haven't read one page of the Goswamis' great treasures. 6 years, initiated. We haven't turned one page of the Goswamis' life and soul, the nectar of devotion, Rupa Goswamis. So that means not too much eagerness. Not too much eagerness. So then we have to cry out, Gurudev, please bless me. Please bless me with some eagerness to study these books. Please give me some enthusiasm. We have to cry and beg. Then we have to do it. We have to try and sit down. So this is the idea.